Results will be announced the same day after the AGM.
Right, thanks very much. Any questions on that? I will be saying a few words about the departing people right at the end. You don't have to wait until the 19th of May to vote. I've already voted, I hope other people have. Encourage those around you to vote, and let's make the record of the year. Right, item 8.2 is report from the Board of Trustees. So before we turn to the Board of Trustees report, council members will be aware that Professor Allerton circulated to council members an email about the Audit and Compliance Order. David, you've got anything to add to that email?
I think maybe we should hear from the Chairman Board of Trustees first. I think people firstly should actually understand why the society has an audit and compliance board and what their actually expected role, because I think that's germane for the discussion. It was a recommendation when we went through the governance change that the society had an independent audit board. Some organisations have audit committees, and it was recommended as good practice for a charity to have an independent audit board. Previously, of course, we had no audit board at all, so we've gone for 150 years without it. The role of an audit board is not to review the end of year accounts. That's what financial auditors do. The role of an audit board is related to risk. It looks and identifies and assesses risks to the society. It then says, are there processes in place to make sure that those risks are being correctly managed and to minimise any risk? And it also checks that those processes are working. And that's what we were charged to do. It requires us to ask awkward questions. If you look at some of the guidelines and literature, it says that you're supposed to ask the sort of questions that normally don't get asked. And in a sense, we're a safety valve for the trustees. We report to the trustees. But our role was to pick up risk to the society before they became a serious event. And in that way, we protect the trustees because they are liable. We are only there to identify and help them with their risk. We're not there to solve the risk. They make decisions related to the risk. We are only there to make recommendations. And it's normal in most companies and in most charities for the recommendations of an independent audit board to be accepted by the directors or by the trustees. The reason being that they've identified risk, and therefore if you're turning down the recommendation related to risk, you do risk the organisation and you risk the liability of the trustees. So normally, those are either turned down because they're impractical or they're turned down with an explanation, and sometimes an explanation goes in the annual report. When we formed the ACB, we actually were quite lucky. We got a lot of expertise in auditing. We had auditors with experience for the NHS, the British Aerospace, Rolls-Royce, the CAA, the IET, and the National Trust. So we had a lot of auditing expertise of both charities and companies. There was, I think, a problem, which is that our main method of communication was via quarterly reports and also quarterly feedback. So sometimes anything we're saying has got a six-month delay associated with it. And generally, our only communication was with the chairman of the Board of Trustees. We had no, to my mind, no direct communication with any of the other trustees. We did start off with an internal audit, and one of the things we noticed is that the Finance Committee had been tasked with the responsibility of selecting the financial auditors and recommending them at the AGM. The Charity Commission recommends that the Audit Board should have that role. They should set the fee, and they should also be responsible for assessing, reviewing the performance of the auditors, normally on an annual basis. For the society, a sense of independence in that you shouldn't have the Finance Committee directly appointing the own assessors, the financial auditors. It gives that sense of independence. We made that recommendation, it was rejected, but it was passed to Hayes McIntyre, the external auditors, for their own view of whether they should be, that auditing role should be changed. So we have then the fact that that recommendation is in the Charity Commission's guidelines, but it's also in our own regulations. So we now have the trustees turning down their own regulation. In my view, it's a breach really of the governance and a difficult one to understand. We did have a presentation from the chairman of the trustees following that problem, and at that stage, Philip Riley resigned and Tony Garth resigned. Philip Riley had been on the finance committee for over 20 years. He chaired it. He was a director of British Aerospace. He had working knowledge of finance and auditing, and he pointed out that he was resigning because he didn't believe the trustees understood the role of an audit board in a charity. Tony Dart is a senior auditor. He works and still works on auditing for large organisations, and he said he did not want his reputation to be tarnished by the type of auditing we were being asked to do in the Royal Aeronautical Society. Both resigned from the point of principle. Both were very senior, experienced people. We also noticed that we had Hayes McIntyre for 11 years without any specific review process or reselection process. There is the implication, I think, of a very cosy relationship between the Finance Committee and the auditors. Generally, although there are no specific guidelines, the literature relating to auditing recommends typically that a 5-year term of serving for auditors. And again, we recommended that to the trustees, and that was referred back to Hayes McIntyre. What I must say is there is no suggestion whatsoever of any malpractice by anybody. My view of the integrity of the Finance Committee, the Chairman of the Finance Committee, the Finance Department, the Finance Director, and Hayes McIntyre is that they have done nothing of any sort of impropriety. I'm sure that they are doing their job to the best of their abilities, and I'm sure they are absolutely honest, straight, and correct. We also undertook other audits. We were involved with health and safety. We did a fire protection, an audit relation to fire protection. We found out that the society wasn't compliant, and as I understand it, had the building burnt down, we would have invalidated the building insurance on 4 Hamilton Place. We also looked at child protection, and again, as I understand it, we had inadequate protection that had there been an incident during one of the school's lectures or events, then we may have been legally liable and we would have certainly done a lot of harm to our reputation. My understanding is that the staff and trustees were more or less unaware of that and that it was flagged by the ACB during their audit. Both of those were immediately fixed, and the Chief Executive Officer has acknowledged the usefulness of the contribution in item 8.2. We also looked into the governance transition, and we had Graham Rowe and David Rowland and David Marshall to help with that audit, and they, two of their, I think, 3 or 4 recommendations were also rejected by the trustees. We then came to an audit of the finance of the society, and I undertook that because Tony Dart had resigned. I met with the finance director. He was incredibly helpful. He provided all the information I asked for. I produced a draft report. I sent it to him and asked him if he would correct any factual errors and also inviting him to comment. And he said, I've read your report and it is okay. He didn't say I've read your report and it's mostly wrong. He didn't say I've read your report and there are errors in it. He said, I've read your report and it is okay, which I took, and I think the audit board took, to mean he agrees with the recommendations. Most of those recommendations were of a fairly minor nature, and they included references to Hayes McIntyre being the auditors for 11 years and saying it would be sensible to put a review process in place to look at the auditors, and generally the guidelines are not to keep reappointing the same auditors. The report was sent to the trustees, and that was rejected, and it was referred back to Hayes McIntyre yet again. I pointed out that there were errors in the feedback from the trustees, and haven't had any response in 3 months since sending that reply to the trustees. So I think there had been a breakdown in communication, but I personally don't believe the breakdown came from the audit board. I think it came from the trustees. When we got to our December meeting with the Audit and Compliance Board, we now hadn't heard anything for a month. A lot of our recommendations to the trustees have been rejected, And there was a degree of frustration building up, a number of people telephoning to say, why are we putting in all this effort if every time we make a recommendation, it's thrown out? At the meeting, two members of staff attended it, and they used a recorder, which was to write up the minutes. I believe the understanding in all the meetings I've ever attended was that the meeting is to help us, or help the staff, to write up the minutes, and we had no objection to them using the recorder for that process. When we got to the contentious issue, which was going to be the feedback from the trustees or the lack of it, I suggested that there was no point in having detailed minutes of those conversations. We could summarise those appropriately, which we did. And I also invited the staff to leave if they felt in any way uncomfortable or compromised by the discussion, and they agreed to stay. We discussed it. It was an open discussion. People expressed their views, they expressed their opinions, but the sense of frustration of an audit board trying to audit very conscientiously, very correctly, was felt, I think, by all members of that board. I think we also assumed a degree of confidentiality about those discussions. We assumed, and I've talked to past presidents, that generally those recordings are only used to record minutes, and once the minutes are approved, the recordings are destroyed. One thing we did agree after that meeting was to write to the trustees to say, could we resolve this impasse? It's now becoming unworkable if every time you throw out our recommendations. And we also agreed to proceed with our audit plan, so we weren't giving up. We said we would carry on with our agenda of our audit plan. The staff made no objections to any of the discussions during those meetings, so they were attending the meetings with their recalls. They didn't object to anything that was said in that meeting. They didn't feel really stepped out of the side of any guidelines of governance or the Charity Commission's guidelines. If they did, they certainly didn't say it. The minutes were written up and approved, and it came to three lines. In February, I received an email. That meeting was in December. In February, I received an email which said, could I listen to recordings or selected recordings of the meeting? And I was asked purely to comment on the nature of the discussion. I wasn't asked why I wasn't explained why I was asking, I was just asked to comment on the nature of the discussion. I objected to that. I said I thought it was unethical, and nobody had sought any permission of me or the ACP to use those recordings in that way. I subsequently got a phone call from the chairman of the trustees. He invited me to resign. He said if I did resign, he'd write me a glowing letter of thanks for all my efforts, and I refused on the basis that I hadn't done anything wrong. He also asked me to apologise to Jane Middleton and Tony Holmes, and I refused again on the basis that I didn't feel I'd done anything, and nor had any members of the board, to upset them. I then got a letter from the Chief Executive Office on behalf of the trustees, removing me from the post and also removing me from the ACB. I was accused of inappropriate behaviour and breakdown in understanding and trust. Inappropriate behaviour is quite a serious allegation. It covers bullying, it covers sexual harassment. Some of the claims against Jimmy Savile were actually called, referred to as inappropriate behaviour. So I think it's a very serious allegation. And when I talked to the Human Resources Department of the university, because my name on some of the literature of the society says Professor Allerton, University of Sheffield, they were very concerned, I believe, that I should actually have been charged or have an allegation against me of inappropriate behaviour. In 30 years in a university, I've never had an allegation, and having served on other committees here for over 25 years, I've never had an allegation of anything against me. The members of the board were effectively sacked. The ACB was stood down, perhaps it would be stood up, but they were effectively sacked. In summary, I believe that since it formed, the ACB followed exactly the guidelines of the ACB and the regulations of this society to the letter. We did everything conscientiously, and we did everything properly and correctly. I believe we've made a useful contribution because we have highlighted a number of risks. We've also told the society, and particularly the finance audit, we've told the society that what they're doing is correct and no action is required. And there's a confidence that things are quite healthy and sound in the society. We've received very little support from the trustees, very little encouragement or leadership, and we do report to them, and we are a new board, only been going for 2 years. There were no warnings of any malpractice or misbehaviour in the ACB. There's been no independent review of what we've done, just a sacking that came rather out of the blue. I believe that board meetings and committee meetings in this society have to be treated as confidential. Otherwise, people are going to say, if I'm in any way critical of the society, I could be in trouble. And I don't think that's healthy for a society. We are not a secret society. We're not North Korea. We are not the Freemasons. You have to be prepared to say what you want to say in a meeting and that it goes forward, even if it's an irrelevancy, even if the chairman thinks it's inappropriate. If it's racism, if it's anything like that, then it should be stopped at the time of the meeting. But I think anything that isn't categorised as inappropriate behaviour should be allowed in that sort of meeting. I think the idea that our recordings are taken away and then processed by staff of the society is a waste of staff time, it's a waste of membership money. We've got people trawling through recordings. I believe at the heart of the problem is that the chairman of the trustees and the board of trustees do still not understand the correct role of an audit board in a charity. And it's set out in the guidelines, and I don't believe we have deviated from those at all. I believe council doesn't have many powers. The trustees can turn up a dismissal board at will, but the council can suspend the trustee or ask the trustees to take on an action on their behalf. I also believe that we have sufficient concern if it's not going to be resolved. Rather than going back to the closed doors of the trustees, then I think it should actually be put forward for an EGM, and I think there's probably enough enthusiasm to get 250 signatures. So that concludes, Chairman, my response to the Chairman of the Trustees statement.
Thank you.
I have to say there's almost nothing I'd rather let's be doing this afternoon than sitting here explaining to you why the Board of Trustees has found it necessary to remove David from his role as chair of the ACB. Especially as David is someone for whom I have the greatest academic respect. But we have, and so I shall. First, I need to remind everyone that a charity is not a public limited company, or private limited company. And the government's processes that are appropriate, particularly for PLC, are just not appropriate for a charity. Specifically, a PLC has to have an ACB to provide protection to the stakeholders. If the PLC ACB cannot agree with the board, it would normally result, as David has said, in something appearing in the annual report. And it would be very unusual for a PLC board to ignore an ACB observation. However, in a charity, the situation is entirely different. Because in a charity, it is the trustees who provide that public and protection. The charity trustees provide protection to the stakeholders. And the Charity Commission rules are quite clear on this. Charity trustees accept unlimited personal liability. And thus, as the Charity Commission repeatedly says in its guidelines, no one can tell the trustees what to do. And let's face it, it would be an absolute madness if, in the face of our personal unlimited liability, some group could say, well, that's how you've got to do things, especially if that could lead to us having to pay out payments. So the situation is entirely different, and as it says there in my response, the Charity Commission nowhere does it suggest that a charity ought to have an ACB. It just doesn't say that. So let's look at the two specific issues, the Board of Trustees removing Dave and the Board of Trustees standing down the ACB. Dave's written to you with his views. He's repeated them this afternoon. And I'm not going to reiterate the details that are in the response that I hope by now you have read. But you will know from the response that most of what David claims, most of David's claims are factually, are factually inaccurate. One area we do agree is when Dave says that the relationship between him and the Board of Trustees has been deteriorating for some months, for some time. It really has.
And then December, early January time, excuse me. December, early January time, I received reports that at the last ACB, a highly regarded member of staff and an equally highly regarded member of the society had both been traduced and accused of totally unprofessional conduct, unprofessional behaviour. Now, some of you may not realise, but the way the governance of this organisation is set up is that the chief executive reports to me in person and to me as a person. And this quite clearly establishes that I have an employer's duty of care through him to all his staff. Equally, I and my fellow trustees, we all have a duty of care to all members of the society. And that duty of care meant that in the light of the allegations that were being made, I had no choice other than to do all that I could to substantiate the reports that I had received. I therefore took the decision to listen to the tape of the meeting. And you need to remember that, again, as Chairman of the Board of Trustees, I have a right to attend any and every meeting of the Society. So that was a meeting that I could have been at, had I chosen. And I have to say that most of the 3 hours of that tape, and that's 3 hours of my life I'm not going to get back, most of the 3 hours of that tape was a meeting like any other. But some of what was said was extremely concerning. And I felt that I needed to share that with my fellow trustees. In order to maintain as much confidentiality as possible for those at the meeting, rather than send the whole tape to the other trustees, I asked Beth, who is our governance manager, and who had been at the meeting, to pull out only those areas of concern with just enough leading to provide context to what's being said. I then sent those extracts to the other trustees, the other 8 trustees, with no comment from me whatsoever. I'd also sent extracts to Dave, again without comment, and I asked for his thoughts. He replied that he could hear nothing wrong at all with anything that had been said. Now, 7 of the 8 trustees came back to me and said that having listened to the tape, they could see no way that Dave could remain as chairman of the ACB. All of us were as keen as possible to make his removal as least difficult for him as we could. All of us were grateful for his time and his efforts. And for none of us, and I reiterate this, for none of us is this in any sense personal. It was therefore agreed by the Board of Trustees that I would approach Dave, explain the situation, and offer him the chance to resign, something he had already threatened to do. I did call Dave at a time of his choosing. I explained in detail why the Board of Trustees had lost confidence in him. I also explained that his comments about a staff member and a fellow member of the society were completely unacceptable, as they are. And I offered him the chance to resign. As you've heard, he refused. I then explained that in that case, the Board of Trustees had no choice but to remove him. But again, having told him that he was going to be removed no matter what, I offered him the chance to resign. Again, he refused, telling me that every action that he had undertaken as chairman of the ACB had been 100% correct, and that the Board of Trustees that was entirely in the wrong. As you then heard, Chief Executive sent Dave a letter formally removing him from the position. So that's why Dave was removed. This one left us with a very difficult situation with the remaining members of the ACB. And in this area, it was unanimously agreed by the trustees, every
every single trustee agreed that the best way forward for the society would be temporarily to stand down the other members of the ACB whilst the role and the function of the ACB was reconsidered. And that was done. Now, I freely admit that the Board of Trustees has found both removing Dave and standing down the ACB difficult. No one, at least all the trustees, want to say no to the volunteers. But we have to do what we believe to be in the best interest of society. And that is what we have done. And I would also make the point that at every stage of this, we have operated entirely within our authority. Dave has portrayed himself as the victim of this. That's simply not the case. It was he who chose to go public, and the real victims aren't here today, and they are Tony Holden and Jane Littleton. Now, last week, Jane sent an email to the trustees, and I've asked Jane and have been given permission to read to you the email that she sent to her fellow trustees. Dear fellow trustees, I am very disappointed to learn that inappropriate comments have been made regarding my relationships with the external auditors by the chairman of the ACB. And I advised Bill Boyle that I wanted an apology. Unfortunately, no apology was forthcoming, and Professor Allerton has since been removed from his post as ACB chairman. Over the past week, I have seen a number of emails suggesting that Professor Allerton has been treated unfairly, and this will be discussed at the council meeting. I feel somewhat aggrieved that I am not having the opportunity to state my case and explain David's inappropriate behaviour towards myself and Tony Holmes. I have considered making a formal complaint to the society due to the seriousness of these allegations, but I do not want to drag the situation out any more than is necessary. It is important that the society moves on from such damaging governance issues as soon as possible. I would like to reiterate that my relationship with the external auditors is and always has been a professional one. The comments made by Professor Allerton are not only untrue, but are of a defamatory nature which could be extremely damaging to my professional reputation. I therefore ask that if and when this comes to council, it be closed down as soon as possible and Professor Allerton is prevented from further maligning my reputation. In the event that further allegations are made, I will have no choice but to submit a formal complaint, etc., etc. Jane and Tony are the victims in this, and I'm going to end simply by reiterating. Given David's actions, the Board of Trustees had no choice but to remove him. We have at all times acted in the best interests of the society, and we have at all times acted within our authority. Back to you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Phil. If council members want to comment, now is the time.
Well, could I just... unfortunately, I could not attend the particular meeting where the recording was used against David. But I was then given a website whereby I could download and listen to the recordings. So, incidentally, I was a member of the Audit and Compliance Board. For some reason, I could not. Either the recordings had been removed from the website or I certainly could not listen. I know Jane Middleton would like this to be closed as soon as possible, but would it be possible for you to indicate to me the incriminating words which were taken to...
I'd rather not do that in okay. front of council, because this is doing exactly what Jane doesn't want.
Okay, I know.
If you were sent a link to it, you weren't sent that by... the Board of Trustees. I assume that, and I don't know, David may have folded it on to you. There's no reason why you should...
No, it was not from David.
Well, someone. At every stage, we have tried to keep this as
close as possible to prevent embarrassment to David. That has gone up. But basically, as Jane says in her email, there was allegations, and Dave made the comment again today, of a cosy relationship. And you will see the details of that in the response. That is simply not the case.
The implication of cosy relationship, I didn't say it was a cosy relationship. I said by having a relationship over 11 years, there is just an implication of it, and therefore that is a risk to the charity.
I'm sorry, Dave, I'm not going to get in a two-way conversation with you. It would be, again, quite an appropriate step to do.
I happen to be a member of the Board of Trustees, and I've been a party to these interactions, these emails, and the recordings. And in my comments back to Phil, I commented that, as Mr. Churchill said, we Americans and you Brits are separated by a common language. But my interpretation, and it's just my interpretation, was of a nature that I responded back to Phil saying, I mentioned, maybe, I don't remember, Phil, 6 or 7 different statements that were made that I felt were, the statements were inappropriate. I'm caught up in the definition of inappropriate behavior. I understand what that legal term is. My response was that the comments and the character of the comments were inappropriate and unprofessional. So I did support Phil, and I continue to support Phil in his position.
Thank you. Just as a statement of fact, inappropriate behavior covers certain areas, is not limited to them, and has no legal definition. Can you confirm that, Beth? So from a governance point of view and from a legal point of view, inappropriate behaviour can be anything that is not appropriate. And making comments about people's professionalism and damaging comments about people's professionalism is inappropriate, I'm afraid.
Chris. President, okay, so I'm neither a member of the ACB nor am I a trustee. I am, for the next couple of months, chairman of professional standards. I feel personally that it's going to be impossible for members of council who are not involved to take a position on this. So I would recommend, and the situation is awkward because the trustee board has fallen out with its political friend. On a personal view, I sense that the relationship has been allowed to deteriorate a bit too long without being, you know, without the issue being raised more widely. I would recommend that the trustees appoint a team from council to have a look at the relationship, make a decision, if you like, an independent decision on the appropriateness or otherwise of statements made at a society meeting. There are other issues to look at, whether the role of the ACB was well enough established when the regulations were drawn up, whether there's a conflict with the Finance Committee, whether there's a conflict with the auditors, whether the trustees gave reasonable and justified response to the ACB recommendation. It's a tricky situation, but some of us, it's a bit too close to the bone to what we went through 3 or 4 years ago. And I recommend to the Board of Trustees that they get an independent look from members of council who are not involved, and as quickly as possible, because I appreciate, Dave, what you said about extraordinary general meetings, but it's not a good place to go, and what I would suggest is that we get some independent members of council to come and have a look and come up with some recommendations. PDQ would be my suggestion. But yes, for the point of view of this council meeting, I'm really not sure what can be gained by studying the exchanges that we've had, because if you go on for a very long time without much new information coming in for objective non-participants to make a decision. So I don't know whether any other members of council would back me on that suggestion.
I agree.
Yes.
It's impossible to make a call without not just hearing, but also the context of where it's saying. So
I just make the point. I mean, I hear the sentiments being expressed, but as Phil said, the trustees take the legal responsibility for the affairs of the society. They have come to the view that they do not have confidence in the chairman of the ACB, and they believe that a review of the way it operates is required. It's very hard to see that a review could change that position.
I accept that, but I think, you know, go to the man in the street test. The man in the street would expect the Board of Trustees to be comfortable about opening up its decision to scrutiny. And I think that would be good for the membership to see that happening. I mean, it's an exceptional case, as I say. The Board of Trustees falling out with its critical friend, and had it been any other of the boards, it might be less sensitive, but it is a sensitive matter. And, you know, I sense that the members of council who are not involved in this issue are a bit at a loss now what we should make of it without further scrutiny.
By the same token, to the man on the street, the words inappropriate behaviour means something pretty obvious as spread by the media. Perhaps a different...
Right, we're all professional people here. Part of the problem was that I listened to the extracts of the recording. It was actually a very unprofessional meeting, the extracts I heard. Imprecise language was used, slang was used, quite apart from allegations of impropriety. If I had chaired that meeting, I would have been profoundly ashamed of myself. I'm making no comment about the chairman of the meeting. I'm merely saying that my reaction on the end of that, when I chair a lot of meetings around the society, if I had chaired that meeting and then listened to the recording, I would have been profoundly ashamed.
Mr. President, I mean, you're making.
I also was very concerned. I mean, when you listen to those sorts of recordings, they are very, you know, there's lots of people talking all at the same time. And without a doubt, when I heard those recordings and I sat like everybody else all the way through, my immediate response was that there's been a complete breakdown in our understanding as a Board of Trustees of what the ACB should be doing. And there was also another issue about particular behaviours and sentiments and whatever the thing. So I immediately said, and I feel really, really sad, when you think of the enormous sort of governance change that we've gone through, you know, we look at the success of everything else that we're doing, we seem to have largely got the governance change right. However, there seems to be a fundamental misunderstanding between the Board of Trustees and the ACB of the role. And that's something that needs to be looked at. And I recommended that we should appoint an independent, and not even council members, but a group of wise men that would revisit the governance and the regulations related to the ACB and come up with a new set of guidelines, regulations, or whatever, the ACB itself, that were absolutely clear, both from the Board of Trustees, and made it much clearer over the expectations of the ACB from the trustees. Clearly there is another issue, which is the words that are said and the sentiment and the sort of the more interpersonal thing that needs to be looked at. And that maybe is the thing, as Chris has suggested, maybe it is a thing that council should look at, because it probably is something that we don't really want to go any further with. but just loads of mudslinging from one side to the other over who's declared inappropriate behaviour, whatever, really isn't going to be helpful going outside of this particular room with this particular group of people. So if I think the council feels it's necessary, then I would suggest that there was a group from council actually have a look at that and decide whether there really is something to answer or not. But I don't think, I mean, it seems to me that the ACB can't continue as it is at the moment. We should have another look at the regulations associated with it and really understand what is sensible and feasible for that board to do. And I think that can be a completely separate group, maybe some of the people who were involved in the original government's working group.
My comment, Lee, I know you want to say something, my comment about council members is that ultimately we are all a council to the membership now. And that if there's a body that's been elected, it is council. And it's probably better not to have people involved from the protagonists. I think in terms of what we can do here is I can make a proposal, which I effectively just did. Council can vote, but I think the proposal is for the Board of Trustees to consider setting up an independent panel of council with a view to reassuring the membership that the Board of Trustees feels that the matter can be looked at.
So which membership?
Well, membership of the society through its elected council members. Whether I'm not suggesting we report back to the membership, but it seems to me to be a sensible response, not least because we're discussing this here at a council meeting. The council have been asked to be involved in some way, and that would be the obvious course of action to me. So that's my proposal.
I think you need to be clear what you're asking. It seems to me, if I interpret it, you're asking a group of council members to look at a decision of the Board of Trustees and adjudicate on whether that small group thinks that was the right decision for the trustees to take or not. And supposing that group comes up and says, well, we disagree with the trustees' decision, and the trustees hold to that decision, where are we now?
Well, yes, that's one possible outcome, Bill, but it's better than the Board of Trustees saying we don't want anyone to have another look at how we acted. The reason you would ask members of council who weren't involved on either side is that it strikes me that this is a disagreement that's been brewing for some time, and that decisions may have been influenced by past interactions between the Board of Trustees and the Audit Compliance Board. I mean, I think it is a matter for the trustees. That is where the governance authority lies. My main point is that the matter has been raised at council. I see a bit of agreement around the table that those of us members of council who haven't been involved in these interactions don't feel that we can usefully go any further at this meeting.
Well, I mean, the matter is it's not within the council's jurisdiction. That's the first point. The second point is, yes, council members have all been elected by the membership, but the trustees have all been elected by council as well. So council members have put their faith in the trustees, the governance of society. And I think you need to be very, very careful constitutionally if you think you can somehow create another group that's going to sit in judgment on the board of trustees. That's a very, quite a precedent to set. And also, we must be very, very careful not to conflate two issues. The issue that has been going on for a long time is the fact that there is, and I believe it it's unfinished business to go on this way, that there are crossovers and unintended conflicts between the role of the Finance Committee and the role of the ACB. And that is clearly something that needs to be reviewed, and the Board of Trustees have taken a decision that they're going to review that. The second issue is what flowed from the one meeting of the Board of Trustees, and that's the dismissal of the chairman's relationship.
And those are two totally separate issues.
The third issue, I'm all quite happy for meetings to be recorded and the recordings to be used against the committee or a board. And I don't think they are. I think you should have, be able to have a confidential meeting with the board and have an open and wide-ranging discussion without any fear that something you say might end up in another place. I think it should be within a confidential compliance.
Well, David, I noted down what you said. You said all meetings of boards and so on should be confidential. We don't want to be a secret society. Now, it seemed to me that was a tautology. Meetings should be open, they should not be confidential. Official meetings of this society should be open. We need to have full and frank exchanges, all right, but there is a limit to what you can say within those full and frank exchanges. And the trustees' judgment was that that limit had been exceeded, that meeting was all in question. And it was a decision of the Chairman of the Board of Trustees to stay exceptionally to listen to the record after that had been brought to his attention on the basis of duty of care.
Mr. President, could
I feel very uncomfortable with this discussion, and I'm sure a lot of council members and Board of Trustees members do, because we are hearing assertions of contradictory facts from, if you like, the two sides. And whilst it's correct that it's outside of the jurisdiction of council, if that's the case, we shouldn't be talking about it. But I do think that we've got a situation, and Chris has, I think, made a good proposal. Let's take it outside of the council discussion, because we're not judge and jury, and with respect, neither of the Board of Trustees, because the Board of Trustees are elected by the council, so Board of Trustees shouldn't see themselves as outside of the responsibilities and accountability for what's going on. So I think it's sensible to say Chris's and allow a group of people to look at the situation independently, so they've not been involved in any of these activities and discussions, try and establish the facts of the situation, the true facts of the situation, and then make some recommendations to the Board of Trustees, the Council, if necessary, but make some recommendations as to the way ahead, because I do think Jenny's absolutely right that the key to this is to stop it happening again. So let's part of it is, yes, looking back so that we can see what are the lessons that we've learned from this debacle. Let's make sure that we put in place improved regulation to make sure this doesn't happen again. And that be the focus of it. I know there are people who feel quite aggrieved around the table in the trustees or in the advisory board, but we shouldn't be thinking of shooting the messenger because we don't like the message. We should be saying, well, how can we make sure that we've got the right message, the best message, to make the best judgment? So I fully support Chris's proposal for the way.
So I was briefly a member of the ACB. I was not at the meeting in question, but I have my full trust in Phil and the other trustees. On the other hand, I find it hard to believe that David is accused of inappropriate behavior, because that's not how I know him. And I think the damage is already done. because now we know something, but not everything. Yeah, and everybody's thinking, oh, what's going on? What really happened? And I support fully Chris' suggestion in any way. A good way would be, let's say, between the two persons in question, David and Phil, to have a referee from not becoming this public. You know, if this is going public, then there's a lot of damage. And so we have to prevent this from going public. And I think it's a personal thing on one hand, and maybe a factual thing. You never know. I don't know. That's the point.
The Board of Trustees cannot be forced to justify action that it has taken and believe that it's doing the best for society. It makes a complete nonsense of the whole of charitable governance. What has happened this afternoon is exactly what Jane Middleton didn't want to happen. That the comments that they made about her have been discussed and unfurled and further.
They haven't.
Well, they've been discussed on this table, Dave.
I'm quite happy for the allegation to be made.
What about Jane?
For you to say what the allegation is. I'm quite happy for council to hear what I said.
Mr. President, can I just get you allowed this item to come on the agenda. You have put this item on the agenda. I think there's been a very, very sensible suggestion that says it's now been brought to the notice of council. Council believe there's a proposal that people who've been independent of the process so far should do a review of the facts. I think you're entirely right that it's not appropriate for members of council to do a review of the decisions that resulted from those facts. But a review of the facts as to what actually happened, what was said, and the appropriateness or otherwise in a council meeting. But what were you expecting to come out? I have to say that it was an inevitability when you put something on the table that what was going to happen. What were you expecting to get out of this by bringing it to the council as a meeting for discussion?
What would have happened in normal circumstances as part of the report from the Board of Trustees, in addition to the written report we had, I had invited the Chairman of the Board of Trustees to make a statement on the absence of the Board of Trustees at the table. That would have been reported back to the Council in the interest of openness. David Allerton, by sending his email to all members of council, effectively brought it out into the open, and I judged that it was appropriate, having been brought out into the open, to have it on the council agenda, because otherwise we'd be accused of ignoring it and suppressing it.
Chairman, if you look at section 8.2, the report from the Board of Trustees, it's 7 very brief sentences. Council has very little idea of what's actually going on in the Board of Trustees. That wasn't the purpose of the governance changes, to actually allow all the decisions to be made behind the doors of the Board of Trustees. All the council seems to do is vote on plaques on buildings. We don't do anything significant in council, and we then learn that the trustees can do whatever they like. But I don't think that's in the spirit of the governance changes.
I think it's true, we've come away.
Can I just make one last comment? Because I'm in a slightly unique position of being a prime member of the ACB, a trustee and council member. I think my summary of the situation that I've seen from it is that it's disappointing that we've got this far. I think the majority of the cause of why we've got this far has been probably your old norming, storming, performing, etc. of actually trying to understand what the ACB is, the organisation, some breakdowns of relationships and communications. And I, for one, think that what we need to do as a Board of Trustees, we'll have this discussion later because it's a trustee board meeting, this isn't a trustee board meeting, is around that we need to look at some lessons learned and why that Lee said about how this affair has risen and look at what actions we might want to put in place so that it doesn't happen again, because from responsible and reputational, this sort of thing can be huge, apart from the fact of, you know, there are a lot of people here that are taking their time, and I can see nobody, from what I've seen, nobody has deliberately gone out to do things incorrectly. Things may have ended up like that, but there was no, I don't believe there was any deliberate. I'm also a little bit concerned that we end up being judge and jury on occasions when it may not be appropriate for that to be done so. So I think as a board of trustees, I'm certainly recommending this afternoon, regardless of what we talk about now, is that we do go away and have a look at this. Because I don't think it's appropriate how we've ended it up. You know, the result is not a good one for anyone.
Right. The members of the Board of Trustees sitting around the table have heard all your comments. We are shortly going to be having our meeting. And we will take that view on board and report that. Can we move on now, please, to the report itself, Phil?
Hi, let's hear some. You've got a very short summary of the actions of the Board of Trustees. To remind you, governance was set up so that the council does all the outward facing and interesting bits of the society efforts, and trustees do all sort of inward facing things, society's business. So we agreed the budget, there was some detailed work around the Society for the Plain project. We talked and agreed to explore further options for the National Airspace Library. We talked about the support of the transition arrangements and finance. And feedback was given to the board and the ACB. Simon updated us on the Great Protection Audit and the Health and Safety Audit, saying how useful these have been. There have been online registrations now live, and this is really important highlight of our day really. We agreed that the board chairman would be asked to include the membership of their boards on the reports to the Board of Trustees. I have to tell you, a lot of what the Board of Trustees does is very nitty-gritty. It's important. It's that sort of level of information. Any questions on any of those seven items?
If it's a summary of the meeting held on the 3rd of November, item 4 is wrong because the feedback wasn't given until the 21st of November. So you haven't actually given any feedback to the group at that meeting.
I'm sorry,
I don't
know the
votes.
It's my update on progress to date.
It's a summary of the board meeting there on the 3rd.
Yeah, it was on the 3rd of November. Simon gave a verbal update of the progress that we've made. So it wasn't the final report, it was just saying that we've gone ahead and had meetings with staff. There's some good stuff coming out of it.
This means we are the board is the trustees, not you.
We're discussing point 4 or point 5.
Point 4, it says at the top summary of the Board of Trustees meeting held, and that is a summary, it's not because the feedback hadn't been given at that point. That's what I'm saying on the 4. It's factually incorrect.
No. This is a report. The meeting held on the 3rd of November, and then after the full stop, it says feedback has been given to the board. It doesn't say feedback was given on the 3rd of November. The board says feedback has been given at the time it was written. Any other questions on the board of trustees? Okay, President's business. I have one item.